Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and today we look at a gentleman who's become a multimillionaire before the age of 35. He is the founder and CEO of PropertyFinder.ae, Michael Leoni. Michael, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Shane, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and what an epic story. You know, you really took something from scratch, and now you've built it to 7 offices regionally. Or what, are you the number one property finder site? Or
yeah, we are the number one network of property portals in the Middle East.
That is very, very impressive. But, you know, I was just telling you, I was watching the movie about Muhammad Ali. They have a new movie out about him. And his brother was saying, you know, Muhammad was out there at 12, 13 years old telling kids that he was the greatest and he's going to be heavyweight champion of the world. And of course, it all came true. Did you have similar visions? I mean, what were you like as a child when we go back? Did you know you were going to be an entrepreneur?
So first of all, thank you for the comparison with Muhammad Ali. I'm very flattered, but I'm going to take that on the funny side. Did I have a vision when I was a kid? Yeah, well, I knew I didn't want to go into the corporate world, and I always knew I was going to build something significant. And so I guess, yeah, the vision of not being part of a career plan but being part of building something meaningful was always there, yeah.
How important is that vision? Do you feel that sense of direction? You know, when you look at people, you know, like yourselves who break from the herd and those others of us who kind of struggle to find our stride.
Well, I think the vision is really what will get you through, what will enable you to go through crises and through failures and always stand up and remember that you want to get to that point. So if you don't have a vision, then you're probably not going to be that type of person that wants to build that kind of businesses.
So you have this vision, but you're also building against that. So you're saying, you know, I need to go and get my MBA because I want to be an entrepreneur, because I want to run a business. Or are you just saying, I want to make more money, so I want to get an MBA?
So the MBA, I didn't go back to MBA, actually. I did it straight after college. So actually, I would never go back now and do an MBA. It was just a continuation of school.
So you found no value in it. You wouldn't go back and do it again.
Look, MBAs are for me a green card to a better career when you're in the corporate world. But if you're an entrepreneur and you're about getting stuff done and building businesses, then an MBA is probably not the best route.
Some people say an MBA can almost destroy you if you want to be an entrepreneur, because they're teaching you kind of all these theories and some of them aren't true and it's not necessarily the right way to go.
I mean, the worst thing for an entrepreneur is to study to do case studies, right? Because case studies try to teach you that there is one way to fight against a problem, but actually there's multiple ways to go around it. So yeah, I do believe that MBAs are entrepreneur killers.
Entrepreneur killers. Is that why we saw so many people? You say Elon Musk drop out of Stanford. You had Steve Jobs, right?
Yeah.
He dropped out of Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
So you think the best thing for an entrepreneur to do if he's an MBA is drop out?
Well, it's not that it's the best thing to do, but I mean, is MBA the best route to go in building a business? No, and everybody knows that. And I guess if you've got the patience to sit at such a late age on the benches of a school to listen to some failure teacher
try to
tell you how to build a business, then I guess, you know, you have way too much patience and to build a business.
Ouch. So really taking a couple slugs here at the MBA programs to the point where we're calling professors failures. You feel that because, you know, they can't make it in business. They're there as business professors.
Look, let's not have a go at the professors of MBA. I've got a lot of respect for the academics, but I'm just saying that, you know, if you want to build a business, just go out there and build your business and don't wait until somebody teaches you how to build a business. There's no book to building a business.
Is that part of it? I mean, I heard one entrepreneur say, you know, execution is worship. Is that what it really comes down to, is good tactics over strategy, that we want to, you know, we want to build a business, we need to be tactically strong?
Yeah, I mean, it's execution is 99% of the business. The idea is going to be 1%. I would invest into a great execution team over a great idea 100 times.
So you think that I was talking to one person. They said, "Here's a formula to accomplish anything in your life." start, don't quit. It's that simple. And say 98% of the people, this is where they either they don't have the you know what, to quit like you did and start the business, or at a certain point it gets too hot, gets too heavy, they drop the ball, they fall down, they don't get back up.
Yeah, I mean, quitting is probably the number one reasons of failures of entrepreneurs. But if you believe in what you're building, and you've got, that's why the vision is important. Because if you don't have the vision, then you'll get stuck on the first obstacles, and you won't go over it.
But a lot of people also say it's not really what you want or how you're going to get there, but why are you doing it? And you know, in those dark moments when you feel like quitting, it's your why that kind of pushes you through. Did you find that?
Yeah, look, a lot of people, I mean, some people say, I want to build a business because I don't want to have a boss. And that's obviously the wrong reason to build a business. You know, not every.
You have more bosses when you have a business. Well, you have all your clients are your bosses, and then sometimes your employees become your bosses.
Yeah, you've got a lot of responsibilities. You've got your investors that you need to report to. So, I mean, there's a lot of other obligations. So it's definitely not the right reasons to go and start a business. But I think it's a frustration. Entrepreneurs are built on frustrations. If you're frustrated about a pain, about a problem that you want to solve and that you're seeing nobody solving it, and you're like, why hasn't anybody come up to solve that? And that's what I came up with when I came here. It wasn't rocket science. I was looking for an apartment, and it was just horrible to look through the classified of newspaper and trying to find an apartment. So it was about, okay, let's build something that can solve that pain.
So if you're frustrated and upset, you could be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That's
a good starting point. Yeah. Yeah. And you've got a pain and you want to solve that pain.
A lot of people say, hey, look, this guy's just lucky. He's in the right place at the right time. He's got the right friends. He's got the right X, Y, Z. What part does luck play into it? And what part is it hard work, sweat, sacrifice?
Like, I think you need it all, right? I mean, if a successful entrepreneur tells you that, you know, there was no luck in his path, he's probably, you know, lying. Obviously, luck plays a good part. But you have to create that luck. You have to expose yourself. So, yeah, I mean, luck definitely helps.
So you go in, you get one of the top educations, which you have no value for. Then you start working. And then at what point, where were you working? And what point was it where you came in and you said, look, take this job and you know what?
I was, you know, out of college. I already wanted to start my business, but my father said, hey, son, you know, I've paid for all these years of studies. You're going to go into a nice corporation and show me that you can fill in a job. So I went and worked at PricewaterhouseCoopers, not as an accountant, but like a corporate finance consultant. And yeah, a year in the job, I, you know, figured that this wasn't for me. It was way too of a corporate job, and I wanted to do something a little bit more extravagant than this. And so I started a business on the side. My first business was a magazine business, and when my boss
what kind of magazines?
Sorry, what kind of magazine? A polo magazine. Okay. And when my boss found out about it, he said, you know, you can't have a business on the side. You need to stop that magazine. And I said, well, you know, here's my resignation.
So the magazine, PwC said.
Yes.
They said stop the magazine.
Yes. I mean,
they didn't
when
like
you're employed,
polo.
When you're employed in a big corporation, well, they want you to be focused and they don't want you to be doing 1,000 things at the same time, right?
So you quit and you didn't have Property Finder when you quit.
No. I didn't have Property Finder.
So you quit, you go to the beach, or what do you do?
No, you quit and you say, okay, now I'm on my own. Let's go and build that thing that I want to build. So initially it was that magazine, but then I came out to Dubai and saw that opportunity of building a property listing.
This was in Switzerland?
That was in Switzerland, yes.
And then so how do you come to Dubai?
Like everyone else, on a stopover somewhere in the world, right? I mean, thank God to Emirates.
That's hilarious. You know, Paris Shahdad Puri, who's the founder of Nakai, Mr. Reliable, he's one of the leading economical appliances providers here in the region. Yep. Same thing. He was here in a stopover, and then he just stayed and started his business here. It's amazing.
I mean, you know, if you came here in 2004, you didn't have to be really genius to figure out that something was going to happen. I mean, you looked at the plans that they were having. You looked at, you know, the models of Emaar and the Burj Khalifa and the Palm, and you thought, okay, if a tenth of this is going to materialize, then something big is going to happen here.
So you just felt this is going to be big.
Yeah.
And you want to be part of it. And you said, take the Polo magazine, burn it, trash it, forget it.
No, I came, I did
I'm
it
going
here.
To something else.
I came and I did it here.
Oh,
initially.
It'd be awesome to do
yeah.
it here.
Yeah, yeah, I did it here. It still runs, by the way. So that was my first business out
is
here.
Is it profitable?
And then, yeah, as profitable as a print business can be. I mean,
so you must have met all the kind of who's who because they're all hanging at the Polo Club, right?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of a scene at the Polo Club, but I it quickly became a little bit too niche of a business. You know, it was.
But you got some wasta from that.
A little bit, yeah. But to be honest, wasta is overrated. Hard work is really what pays off. I mean, as boring as it sounds, wasta is going to get you maybe one deal or, you know, but it's not going to build a business.
So you're here looking for a place you can't find when you say, boom, property finders hashed?
Yeah, I say, well, you know, where's the magazine that just has real estate listings in it? Well, there's no magazine with real estate listings. Really? I mean, is it really going to have to be that painful to find an apartment? Yeah, well, let's fix it. And then the rest is history. Yeah.
Bam. And he becomes a millionaire. We're going to be talking a bit
yeah,
more.
Overnight, Shane. Overnight.
That's it. It's done. Well, real estate, a lot of people did, you know. They just, you know, a couple moves here and there and you're done. But we're going to get some more insights from Michael Leani, the Chief Executive Officer and Founder of PropertyFinder.ae in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and I'm here with Michael Leani, the Chief Executive Officer and Founder of PropertyFinder.ae. Michael, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
So for those of you just joining, Michael talked about the importance of vision and hard work and often trumping even education and WASTA is really what you believe that, you know, while Michael does have one of the top MBAs in the world, he still feels that the greatest asset is your focus and hard work.
Absolutely.
And for those just kind of, he came to Dubai jobless on a stopover, running his own magazine. Well, he had a job. It was a Polo magazine, but technically he was running the business, so it's not a job, right? You're an
yeah.
employer. So, and then he decided to start Property Finder first as a magazine, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, correct.
Because there wasn't really anything. This was 2007, where many, many millionaires were being minted here in Dubai.
Yes.
So tell us about, you know, the early days of starting it up, and was it a challenge or was it just easy cash?
So the early days were actually 2005, not 2007. The magazine started in 2005, and it was about generating leads for the real estate agents. You know, real estate agents were after closing real estate deals, and there was no dedicated media for the industry, and so we built this magazine that we distributed for free to Dubai and Abu Dhabi mainly, and started generating leads for the real estate agents, and that's how the business started. And so the ancestor of Property Finder is actually a print business.
And the initial startup, I mean, so you were actually obviously putting money in before money, you know, started to come back. How much money did you kind of go burn through before you hit profitability?
Look, we burned quite a bit of money. We were, of our own money, probably invested $500,000. It was me and a friend that started the business initially. But then 2 years later, we attracted investors in. So News Corp came in and invested a few million dollars into the business. And so it took us quite some time. It took us like 5 years to get profitable. So you have to keep your focus and we were talking about the vision earlier. You have to keep your eyes on that vision dot, so that you don't lose focus and get distracted by all these losses.
How do you decide? You know, a lot of people saying how I finance my business. So you obviously sold some equity. How much equity do you sell?
Yeah, look, it's always a tricky part, right? The earlier you sell, the more you're gonna have to sell. The more traction you have, the less you're gonna have to sell. So the longer you can hold on to your equity, the better you're off. I got lucky because I actually sold majority of my business in 2007 and bought it back in 2009 post-crisis. So I actually own today more shares than I did when I founded the business with a friend, because I bought my partners out during the crisis. So I saw an opportunity and people didn't believe in Dubai, and in 2009, that was post Lehman Brothers crash, and went around and offered to buy my shareholders out. And
you bought News Corp out as well?
And so I bought News Corp out, yes.
Wow, at a discount, I imagine.
At a discount, indeed, yes.
So that was an amazing move.
Yeah, that was a bold move at the time, because obviously it was not a given that, you know, Dubai was going to survive, and everybody, you know, it was at the time that it was articles in the newspaper saying people were leaving their cars at the airport and fleeing the country. So people had little faith in those days in Dubai. But if you lived here and you believed in... and the ruler's vision, again, going back to the vision and the infrastructure that were built and the reasons for Dubai being, there was no reason that a crisis would wipe it out. So now is the time to invest.
And so you went for it. Were you married? Are you married?
No, I'm not married. No, not married. I mean, you know,
here we go. We got a young and eligible, self-made millionaire on the market here.
I wouldn't say on the market, but let's say not
married. Oh, you have a girlfriend. okay. He's got a girlfriend.
Are they illegal here, girlfriends? No. Aren't you supposed to just be married here?
Are you a special someone.
Yeah, a special someone.
Do you have your eye on? So, okay. Very, very exciting. You pushed through the crisis. And is this one of the traits that, you know, failure and setbacks that the average person gets dissuaded or gives up, or a champion presses on? And, you know, I thought we started this with Muhammad Ali. I think you look at Muhammad Ali, he lost his fighting title. He was stripped of his right to box. Mm. And he still never gave up. And some people say he lost his best boxing years because of the American institution that stripped him of that title. But he pushed through. And do you feel that, you know, that's the kind of resolve you need, and that's what's lacking between the champion and the layman?
Look, I mean, failure, you have to go through some sort of failure in order to be, to build yourself and to be that robust person that you want to become as a champion, if you're comparing to Ali. But I guess, going through the crisis, everybody that can survive a crisis will get out of it a little bit stronger. And so if today, you know, the world economy was to go into another slower mode, I wouldn't be afraid. I actually would see it as an opportunity and would try to, grab that opportunity where people don't see it.
So, you know, when you use the language like to build yourself up, obviously, A, you have a vision of where you're going. You have a vision of a business you want to build. But the subtext of that is, you know, you have a vision of who you want to become as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also one of the big differences, right? That a lot of people don't have this vision of who we want to become. They're focused on what they can get.
Yes.
And then when you describe this robustness of person, what kind of traits are you looking at developing in yourself to become the leader that you want to be?
So I like to think of my life in two parts. I've got the first part of my life where I'm focused in creating wealth, and that's obviously the part that I'm in right now. And then I would like to hope that I'm not going to be after that wealth all my life, because it gets a little bit boring and it's a little bit shallow. And focus the second part of my life in doing meaningful things that can potentially change something in this world. If I look at where I want to be and which person I want to be, well, having wealth is going to help me to get to where I want, and that's why I'm focusing on that now. But it's not a destination. It's not the ultimate destination.
So a humanitarian work is,
yeah, philanthropist, yes.
Okay, but you don't need to wait, right? You can do that now, right?
Yeah, but you need focus, right? So when you build a business, you need to be focused. And same thing with philanthropy. I mean, if you do it a little bit on the side, then it's charity, right? It's not really philanthropy. If you want to change and do something meaningful and have an impact on this world, you got to do what Bill Gates did, is quit his job and focus 100% on his foundation. And then you can have an impact on the world.
So that's what you want to do. So you have kind of a two-phase plan. Phase one, you're going to go create your wealth. Phase two, you're going to stop business altogether and be like Bill 100%.
You never stop business, because you always have interest in, but you spend your time not in building new businesses, but you spend your time in where your heart is and the cause that you want to change. Again, a little bit like entrepreneurship, you're mad about something, you have a pain, something annoys you, you want to fix it. That's entrepreneurship. Same thing with philanthropists. There's a cause that you want to support. There's an injustice in the world. There's something that you feel that is unfair, and you want to try and change it.
So, you know, you're taking on huge goals, you know, coming to a country where you don't know anyone, starting businesses where technically, you know, you don't know anything about when you start. And, you know, these are big visions now that you're talking about, potentially, you know, world changing goals. Have you ever felt overwhelmed, or are there some days where you're like, I'm just snowed under, you know, with the execution of this vision, and I just don't, you know, I don't think I can pull through this, like the mountain climber who's halfway up the cliff and his muscles are burning and he's like, man, this really sucks.
Look, not really, to be honest. The best way to fight this is to make sure that you have fun all the way and that you enjoy what you're doing and not beat yourself too hard and not put too much pressure, you know? So I make sure that I enjoy every day that I have, and it's not like I have got a time watch hold telling me you got to achieve this at that time. You know, you just go by your pace and you just continue and look towards that same direction that you always had, and just, you know, enjoy the ride.
What was your darkest moment where, you know, all this thing that you just described didn't really work, where you were like, man, I want to throw myself out of the window right now, like right now?
When News Corp told me you have to come up with a budget that is going to show a profit. If not, we're going to get rid of you. They had a majority in my business. So basically they told me, you know, you need to fire your entire team, and so that was a pretty dark moment. So how do you turn that around? And you're thinking, hey, these guys are, you know,
these are tough guys.
They're not teddy bears. They're going hard at you. And so yeah, during those moments, you think, okay, is there a way out? How can I climb that ladder? And
what does get rid of you mean exactly?
Fire you.
Yes. And so you're gone. So they owned the majority of
the
business.
They wanted to fire me, and they wanted the business to stop being in loss-making business. But we were in the middle of a crisis, and that was the opportunity to grab market shares. And so really that was in the tactics. And so I convinced them, you know, that without a team, that I would leave with my entire team. And without a team, they wouldn't obviously have anything. So they were better off selling their shares. And that's what we agreed at finally.
So a few sleepless nights.
Yes. I mean, you know, a few sleepless nights where you're wondering if you're still going to be there in the next month. But, you know, when you're young, you don't have a family that you need to take care of. I mean, it's easier to do when you're in your mid-20s than it would be today.
This is Michael Leoni, the Chief Executive Officer and founder of PropertyFinder.ae, giving his secrets and lessons learned on the road to the top. We're going to be right back. Hear his business philosophies in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and I'm here with Michael Leoni, the Chief Executive Officer and founder for PropertyFinder.ae. Michael, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
For those just joining us, Michael had gone the corporate route, has gotten an MBA from one of the top schools in the world, and then was working with one of the big four consultancies, only to throw it all away to start his own business, his dream, which initially was a polo magazine. And then once he finally came to Dubai, he realized there was a gap in the market for property listings. And that's when he started Property Finder, first as a magazine and then as an online listing business. For those of you who perhaps have missed the earlier part of the discussion, you can catch it on dubaieye1038.com/eyeoncareers and go to the podcast section where all our podcasts with all our top business people are listed. Michael, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. Happy to be here.
It's quite exciting. You know, you really are a self-made man. And, you know, I think you've really talked to the importance of focus and having a vision both for your business and for yourself, where you are actually focused on what kind of person you want to become, which is a very powerful position that can help you get through the dark moments, of which you've had a few. But do you have any really key business philosophies or North Stars that guide you as you build your business?
Well, when you're trying to build a business, what you need is a team, and every investor will tell you we don't invest in the idea, we invest in the entrepreneur and his team. And so as an entrepreneur, you're merely the catalyst of talents, and what you need to be able to give to the people who work for you is share that vision and envy to be part of that adventure. So be part of that story. The story is going to happen. Whether you're on board or you're not on board, we are building this. So, you know, you can come and be part of that and make it a bigger story even by bringing your piece of element to it. And so, attracting talents and attracting smart people and getting them, you know, engaged in what you're trying to build is the most important thing as an entrepreneur. So
a lot of really smart people want to work for great companies, established brands. Yeah. They want the brand strength. You know, they're sitting there. There's an aircraft carrier, and you're in a little dinghy. You know, hey, this is going to be a dreamline cruiser, though. Jump in and let's go.
So that was true. You know, that was true 10 years ago, and it was harder to kind of sell yourself and your business because entrepreneurship was not so big 10 years ago. But today, I mean, you know, big companies are a little bit out of fashion. You know, who wants to work for a big corporation? I mean, and get in that corporate world and know exactly where you're going to be 20 years from now. That's nobody really aspires to that.
I love it.
Anymore.
You trashed the academics. Now you're trashing the corporate institution. It's great. But I mean, it's when you first start, though, that I'm getting at. I mean, right now you have 7 offices. You have, you know, you have a huge turnover. You're a sprawling global business. You know, you're a proven business person. You know, you have draw, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you started, you know, when you really need the talent is, you know, when News Corp is like, we want to fire you. You know, you need to turn this around or we're going to can you. And that's when, like, really smart people are like, there's no way I'm getting in this boat.
Well, that's why you have to share your vision, and your vision needs to be credible, because there's no way someone smart is going to join you in that little tiny office that you got in your early days, you know.
Or your kitchen.
I mean, the first 5 people I interviewed them out of Starbucks coffee, right? We didn't even have an office. So
it's more of an upscale coffee.
You're telling a story. You're like, okay, this is where we are today, and this is, you know, you see that little point over there? Like, this is where we want to go, and this is the path to it. You want to go with me? Do you believe that we can get to that little point? And if you're convincing enough, and if you, you know, and if you're enthusiastic enough, and if you have that energy that people can feel, and that, you know, you are going to get there, then they'll jump on board. There's a lot of people who are looking for adventure, and who are kind of happy to, you know, jump on the back of somebody who's got a vision.
So it's really sharing that vision, but you did find it a bit difficult in the early days to get good talent.
Look,
because you don't have the budget
days,
either.
You do with what you have, right? You find you first need to find people who are willing to, you know, to come
work
and join.
For free.
Work for free, not really, but, you know, paying people is extremely important. Don't ever expect anyone to work for free.
But you have to pay below market, right? If at the beginning, because you don't have the budget, right?
Yeah,
you don't have money coming in. It's
but
not
then
like,
again, there's excitement. You give people more responsibilities, and they get to do what they like, and they feel that they work with great people, and it's a fun atmosphere, and it's you know, they you're not micromanaging them, and so you got to give all the other advantages, and then yeah, okay, the pay is maybe a little bit lower today, but the prize is much bigger at the end of the road.
So people really critical, which, you know, I guess as you move forward, it becomes easier, which is when you need them less, or not, maybe not need them less, but, you know, you still need them. But
you need bigger and bigger talents, right? So even today, you know, we employ 130 people, and as I'm looking at hiring, you know, some top executives, well, I'm competing with, you know, the Googles and the LinkedIn and, you know, the big tech companies. So what is it that, you know, a smaller local tech business has to offer? And so, you know, they want that excitement. So you can get them a piece of the cake, which usually you cannot have in those big corporations anymore. You know, they can get part of the ESOP plan, the employee share option plan. And so you can pay them a bonus in shares of your business. And potentially those shares will, you know, will grow in value. And it's not potentially, it's just a given that as your turnover grows, the value of the shares will continue growing. So so whatever shares they're getting today are going to be worth, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 to 100 times more in a couple of years.
But you're not publicly listed.
No. Right.
So these are phantom shares, or how does the share?
Yeah, so they're phantom shares, absolutely. So they will be issued when there's a liquidity event and will be distributed to the employees. But they're, you know, there's a, they're on a contract, their certificates, and they're legit, and actually, the people who've joined me in the early days have already earned their shares and made a few millions out of it. So the story
on
works.
Paper, or they exited with cash in hand.
They've exited not all of it because they wanted to keep. So they've already exited quite a bit of money, but you know, they want to be part of it until the end, because we're still you know, scratching the surface, like we like to say.
Nice. What's the evaluation of your business?
Well, I can't share these kind of figures. We'll share it the day we go public, but.
Ballpark?
Joker.
So, you know, you talk about an interesting thing. You know, how do you think that we have the right systems in place to really drive peak performance or manage your human element of your business? You know, you're talking about your ESOP plan. Or what do you call it?
ESOP, yeah. Employee ESOP. Share option plan.
ESOP. So, you know, that's, you're trying to get alignment but do you feel that, you know, when we look at what's happening in the world today, you know, you have, for example, Encyclopedia Britannica, who paid huge money to a lot of professionals to make it, wiped out by Wikipedia, which is professionals working for free.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we obviously can get professionals to work not for free. I'm not saying that we should do that. But what I'm pointing at is that our theories of motivation, our incentive plans, our structure that we're using to govern the human element of our business, are they obsolete?
Yeah, I think, you know, life is changing. Technology is changing the way things are working, and so anything that we used to do 10 years ago is not going to work today. Technology just makes things move a lot faster than what they used to. So you have to find, you know, the right motivation for these people to come on board, and people are not looking for these big corporate jobs anymore.
So when you look at this this whole thing, as you said, we're not doing things as they were 10 years ago. Now we're facing more change than we ever have. And, you know, I even heard some people saying email is obsolete now, or this is obsolete. And I just feel like maybe I'm totally obsolete. So, you know, as a business person, you know, is the rate of change, how do you deal with it? Is it outpacing your strategic planning process? What kind of things do you do to facilitate a more agile organization to deal with this?
Well, you got to be very alert when you work in the tech world, because you could be wiped out. You know, in a couple of years, you could literally be wiped out by a new app that comes, and, you know, suddenly people search for property in a different way, then they don't go on portals anymore. You know, things can change quite quickly, so you have to think of what's the next thing, and you have to not fear the cannibalization of your own business. So potentially launching an app that could kill your own business, but might as well that you launch it than somebody else launch it. So a little bit the Apple approach, you know, they with the iPod, they wiped it out with the iPhone, but it doesn't matter because the iPhone, you know, took a lot more market
share. So you're trying to create your own innovation team to be the one that wipes out yourself.
Yes. Well, that's, you know, that's the only way that you can survive over the years and over the generations, is if you keep innovating and wiping yourself out. So, you know, right now we're thinking very much mobile, and then the entire team is thinking mobile and not desktop anymore, because nobody, or at least a lot less people, will be searching on desktop, and people want to search on devices. And so your experience needs to be mobile friendly and not built for the desktop.
This is Michael Leoni, the Chief Executive Officer and founder of PropertyFinder.ae. He will be telling us what he looks for when he hires his top talent in just a minute.
Dubai i103.8, content that keeps you listening. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and I'm here with Michael Leoni, the Chief Executive Officer and founder of PropertyFinder.ae. Michael, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's It's been quite a journey here. For those of you just joining us, Michael quit his job at PwC to go and start a polo magazine. And then when he came to Dubai, realized a gap in the market, he started propertyfinder.ae. Initial success with the investment of News Corp, but things turned sour as the financial crisis brought the sky falling down. And a News Corp started to make moves to almost fire him, but he turned it around and bought them out. One of the best moves of his career, and now enjoys a multi-million dollar turnover, which he refuses to talk about or give us any insight into. But we will still take a couple more stabs at trying to figure out how much his business is actually
worth.
Please
do, Shane, please.
He's got 7 offices and 130 employees. So a couple clues that we've picked up as we circle around this issue. But more importantly, he's a very successful entrepreneur. Michael, what do you see are the key traits that a successful entrepreneur needs to have or embody in order to find the results that you have?
I think passion is obviously the key that you need to find an entrepreneur. He needs to be passionate about what he wants to solve. Again, we talked about the pain earlier. He needs to be almost mad that nobody has fixed that pain and wonder why this business doesn't exist, and let's do it. So passion is one trait that an entrepreneur needs to have, and then leadership, obviously. Somebody needs to have some sort of aura. You got to want to work for somebody that, you got to be a leader, and you got to be want to follow that person. So I think, energy, high energy, these are the kind of things that you're looking into an entrepreneur, and obviously some brains.
And some brains. But your passion's not really there when you really need it most, right? Like when the financial crisis is there, things are falling apart, your partners are probably bickering or fighting, which, you didn't mention anything about that, but I'm just guessing that probably was going on. And, News Corp wants to fire you. It's not like you're like, wow, really jumping out of bed with a zing in your step, hopping into the office.
No, I mean, you obviously go through tough times, and again, going back to the vision that we talked earlier, it's really important that you don't get carried down and dragged down into the bad news of the moment, and continue to keep your head up and look at that vision. So you need to have that energy, and I guess naivety is also something a trait that you need to have as an entrepreneur.
Ignorance.
Not ignorance, but a little bit of naivety, thinking, I can solve that problem. I mean, and that's why being young is usually one of the traits of entrepreneurs, because when you're young, you're not aware of all the obstacles that you're going to run into. If I had knew from day one that I started the business all the troubles I would have run into throughout my, throughout building this business, I probably would have never started. I probably would have, I'm tired of this. Let me just get a job and do a 9-to-6. But, you're young, you're naive, you don't see all these problems, and that what gets you going. So, stay foolish, like Steve Jobs said.
So stay foolish. So okay. So in what? So we got passion. We got naivety.
Leadership.
Energy.
Leadership.
Those are
the traits you want.
But the main thing is just do it. That was really kind of the big themes from you, where you were just like, jump in there, get going. I don't know how I'm going to solve this, but this is my first brick I'm laying in this cathedral.
Yeah, you got to be ready to execute. I mean, entrepreneurship sounds oftentimes now when you hear it, especially when Shane's invited me on this fancy radio interviews, it sounds all glamorous, Entrepreneurship is amazing. You're going to be your own boss and you're going to make multi-million dollars. This is not entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is a lot less glamorous than what it sounds. And you go through hard times and you do have to do, a lot of the hard work yourself and pull up your sleeves and get your hands dirty and be ready for it. So I often, when people ask, I'd like to do this and I like to bid that, the first question to ask yourself is, do I really want to be an entrepreneur? Because it's not always cool. It's a lot of worry, it's a lot of stress, and some people, don't want to go through that. So
sometimes you have to mop the floor, take out the garbage.
Yeah, you have to do a lot of dirty things and take tough decisions that you don't necessarily want to do. So entrepreneurship is not glamorous.
What do you look for when you're hiring people, when you're hiring your top people?
Well, you look for people that will believe in your vision, right? Because if people don't believe in your vision, they're just coming for the pay, then you want to get them out
of
the
way. You have to fire them.
You don't want
cut them.
You don't want them around.
But let the hatchet man loose.
So you want somebody that, you know, gets excited about what you want to build. You know, you want to feel that they're enthusiastic and they're like, hey, I want to jump on that ship. This looks really amazing. And, you know, what you want to build, I really believe that there is something to be done out there. And I like you. I can't believe that nobody's done it before. Let's just go and make it happen. So you want to have that. You want to feel that passion in people that you hire. But as you grow and in a bigger organization, you need to find people that are going to structure your organization. And you know, when you're an entrepreneur, you're not oftentimes the most structured person. And so you also need people that can balance you, and people that can ground you, and people that can bring processes into your business. And so it's about hiring, you know, people that can bring all these processes, a little bit more of the corporate world into your business, because no matter what, as you grow, you are going to get more corporate, and you need to get more corporate, get corporate governance in place. And
you're becoming the very thing that you hated at the beginning. We try
and, you know, being very aware of the weaknesses of corporation, never wanting to be a corporation. So we try to stay, you know, quick, agile, and make sure that we don't, you know, become fat and boring.
Right. So, so you look for energy, passion, enthusiasm, as well as, you know, they're bringing something different to the table that's really going to add value to where you're going. What was the worst interview you ever had?
What was the worst? I mean, we've had the other day, actually, somebody in Saudi Arabia sent her maid for an interview. So we interviewed, we had this salesperson for an interview, and the person didn't show up, but sent her maid.
And what did the maid, telling you about how good the salesperson is?
Yes, so the maid was telling us how her boss was great for the job.
That's very weird.
Yeah, it's weird. So you're asking me about the weirdest interview. That's as weird as it gets,
and
right?
And so you humored her. You actually interviewed her.
Yeah, we actually hired the maid. Really, literally. Like, oh, yeah? We actually hired her because she was funny. And, you know, she obviously cracked a few jokes at the fact that her boss sent her there to do that. And then we offered her a job. And yeah, so that was funny.
That's hilarious. That is... very, very hilarious. So what, you know, is your advice to anyone who's out there thinking about quitting their job and starting it? You know, you started yours on the side. Is that what you think you should do? Or do you think you should, in hindsight, just burn your boats and go in there and go
on? Look, the later you wait, the harder it's going to be to quit. Why? Because that's what corporations do. They throw money at you and they give you a lifestyle and they make sure you're very comfortable in your seats. And then suddenly the cost of opportunity that you have of quitting that job becomes huge. Let alone if you have a family and a wife that, you know, likes a little bit of shopping and her holidays, then that's it. I mean, it's going to be very hard for you to quit that and get out of it. So if you feel that you've got that entrepreneurial fiber in you and that you really want to go out there and build it, then don't wait. Do it sooner than later. And you know, don't get used to a lifestyle. That's the biggest killer of entrepreneurship, and your biggest cost is going to be yourself when you start a business. And so if you have a lifestyle that you need to sustain, it's going to be very complicated to start a business.
So live like a vagrant.
Not live like a vagrant, but, you know, live modestly until you can really afford it, you know?
Well, I mean, like, be naive, live like a vagrant. These are the beginnings of your success.
Exactly, right?
No, but a lot of entrepreneurs, they've lived out of car. Jean-Paul DiGiorgio, the founder of Paul Mitchell Systems, he was homeless.
Yeah.
He was homeless.
I mean, a lot of the entrepreneurs, you know, don't come from fancy jobs and started the hard way. So getting comfortable is probably the biggest enemy of entrepreneurship. And so before, I mean, obviously, do I want to own my own business and not have to report to a boss and all that? Of course, but you have to think, is it, you know, the path to get there is long, you know? I mean, it took me 10 years to get to where I am, and it's you know, I got some gray hair along the way.
You don't really, actually.
I do.
There's not really any. But Not yet. I don't think you're stressed out. You're not stressed out enough. But
no, well, obviously, it's 11 a.m. in the middle of the week, and I'm here with you laughing in a studio. Oh, yeah. So, you know, I'm obviously not too stressed out that my job is keeping me in the office, you know, Shane.
No, but I'm sure as you go. So we are now international expansion. What countries are you looking at expanding into?
So we are now in UAE, obviously, Qatar, Bahrain, Lebanon, Morocco, Egypt, Saudi Arabia. And there's a couple of big countries in the regions that we're eyeing. You know, Turkey is a very interesting one. Obviously, 80 million people. Iran is also a very interesting one, but obviously, it's a little bit complicated. But it you know, if things open up, it could be interesting. So,
what you know when you look at these roles, you know, you're obviously hiring. What are the kind of key roles you're hiring for right now?
Right now, we're actually, you know, when you take your business to the next stage, you're raising money from larger VCs. So we're right now in a phase where we're attracting funds from funds that had never stepped foot in the Middle East. So American funds that are investing for the first times. You know, VCs that were backing some of the biggest internet companies like Facebook are now looking at coming to the region. And so it's very exciting times to kind of bring that kind of money to the region.
Wow. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time. It was a really interesting window into your life, your journey, and your business. And we look forward to watching you blossom in the next chapter of this company.
Thank you, Shane. It was a pleasure being here with you.
This was Michael Leoni, the founder and chief executive officer of PropertyFinder.ae. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, hoping the rest of your life is the best of your life.